We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Bases Loaded. He struck him out swinging. Great slider from Will McIntyre for a shutout sixth. Your weekly look inside Razorback baseball.
Came in a tough situation and just made great pitches.
With the voice of Arkansas baseball, Phil Elson.
Slavens drives the 1-0 to right field. Pearson at the wall, leaping out of here. Two-run homer for Brady Slavens.
And Razorback legend, Bubba Carpenter.
He stayed on the tracks, didn't he, Phil? Look at him. He kept that barrel working through the zone.
Now, time to put those beer hats on your head.
The bases loaded, two outs in the ninth inning.
Here's Bases Loaded. Oh, and by the way, Bubba, it's a fair poll.
Welcome into Bases Loaded. This is our eighth episode of Bases Loaded as Arkansas gets into the meat now of the SEC schedule. Let me introduce my partner, Bubba Carpenter. Bubba, how you doing today?
Doing great, Phil. Big weekend win for us, so my Monday started out really great.
What's your fun meter looking like at the moment?
It's about a 9.5, I gotta say. I'm feeling good on a Monday.
I was going to say, that's a seriously fired up fun meter for a Monday, man. I mean, it all has to do with what happens on a Sunday, right? Doesn't that sort of dictate how you feel on a Monday? No matter if you won the series or not, the outcome of Sunday's game quite often dictates how you feel Monday.
It does. It really does. And that's pathetic, but it's so true. And coming back and winning that series, winning that game yesterday, seeing guys clutch up yesterday, you know, I was super proud of the bullpen. Adcock, Carter, Wood, they really clutched up. Seeing Gage Wood come in and face four batters and really just dominate all four of them was really good to see.
So Arkansas beats Alabama 2 out of 3, had a 3-1 week. You can't forget the victory over the Omaha Mavericks on Tuesday. A run rule win. But this series against Alabama stood out from all of the others because, and I know that in the second game of the doubleheader with LSU, like that was a rubber match too. But that also was the second game of a doubleheader. That's a little bit of a different thing. When you play on a Sunday in the SEC and really all across college baseball, and the series is tied 1-1, I mean, these are not must-win games, but gosh, if you're going to have a good weekend, they are must-win games. And usually by that point, you get pitchers that have to throw twice on a weekend. They faced batters that they've already faced a couple of times through the batting order. You know, scouting reports go out the window because you're going by what you've seen in the first two games of the series. Emotions run high on Sundays. So, I mean, it's a 5-4 win. It's just one win in the standings. But I felt, Bubba, like Sunday's victory against the Crimson Tide said a lot about this team's makeup.
It just felt different Sunday to me down there before the game around the dugout. It felt different. It always does on a Sunday rubber match though, but there's just something about this team. I really love it. I loved how they battled back after Friday night, and Fridays are, you're going to have days like Friday. I mean, it's the SEC. We've talked about it all year. Some of the blowout wins. I think you could have put Otani on the mound Friday night and Alabama would have got some hits. Everything they put the bat on found a hole. I think these guys did a really good job of just flushing Friday, coming out and really putting it together. Two good games on Saturday and Sunday. But yesterday, for, you know, it was just top to bottom. It was just a good performance all the way around.
Is it easier for fans or for players, do you think, to move on from a 12-1 loss? Where you allowed 22 hits. Like, that's another thing about that game on Friday. 22 Alabama base hits. It's the most hits that an opponent had ever recorded in a game against a Dave Van Horn coached Arkansas team. It's a lot of games, but that didn't define the series.
No, to answer your question, it's harder for the fans to flush it than it is the players. I mean, the players, look, they know what happened, and they just flush it. They come out Saturday ready to play baseball. That's the beauty of that happening on a Friday, is you know you get to get right back out there on the field at 2 o'clock on Saturday and go get them again. And, you know, we're in football. You got to wait a whole week. But that's the beauty of baseball. You get back out there the next day. And I know these guys couldn't wait to get back out there on Saturday and go at it again. But, you know, the fans have a harder time because they look at it as, you know, oh God, we just got killed by Alabama. But you know what? I mean, it happened a couple of years ago. Bama came in here and won the first game, really handed it to us on a Friday night. We won the series and we went on to win an SEC championship after that. So you got to put it behind you. And like I said, it was just one of those nights. You know, I keep up with exit velo, sometimes in the book, sometimes just in my head, but I counted 9 hits on Friday, less than 90 miles an hour. And a ball hit less than 90. A few of them were in the 70s, but a ball hit less than 90 is not hit very hard. They just found holes. They were just ground balls in the holes or bloopers. Even when pitchers made good pitches, you know, they found a way to put the bat on the ball. And I mean, that just happens. And you saw it even out later on there. You know, yesterday's game, a couple balls were hit over 100 miles an hour and they were outs. And so, you know, it they say it all evens out. Sometimes I wonder if it does. But Friday night was Alabama's night. And tip of the hat to the players for forgetting about it and coming out Saturday and playing Razorback baseball.
So there were a couple of turning points in Saturday's game, and a lot of us would focus on Brad Bohannon's ejection for obvious reasons, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But I think the real turning point is when Kendall Diggs hit a 3-run homer in the 4th inning after Alabama had taken a 4-0 lead.
Once Holman gets to a second strike, it's been tough. He has 5 Ks. He's ready at the belt. 2-2 to Diggs. A ball hammered to deep center field. Back is Pinckney. He leaps way out of here. Kendall Diggs does it again. Another 3-run homer in a career that's made of 3-run homers. Hogs are on the board, down by 1.
That was the thing that really jump-started the team. That was, they'd hadn't scored in the game yet. They had only 1 hit in the game up until that point. And there is nothing to get a team going like a 3-run homer. And it didn't give them the lead. It didn't win them the game. But it was a signal that, hey, enough with this.
Oh, I think you're right, Phil. From that point on, I mean, the tides turned. Kind of the momentum swung back in our way. It was a big 2-strike, 2-out hit. And Kendall has a knack for those in his career so far early here at Arkansas. And so it was a huge swing of the bat, and it really did kind of change. If Kendall doesn't hit that ball, I wonder how this series ends up.
You know, Kendall Diggs is like the perfect designated hitter. And I hope sometime that he finds a position that he can play on a consistent basis, because his bat will take him a long way. When you have a knack for driving in runs and you're able, like, he's really strong. There's something about his approach and how he shrinks the strike zone that he's just good at getting pitches to drive and doesn't miss them. Like, it's no coincidence that out of his 11 homers in his career, Bubba, 7 of them are either 3-run homers or a grand slam. Now, one of them is a grand slam. That was at LSU. 6 3-run homers in a career that's not even through halfway through his second season. He's exactly what you want out of a designated hitter, which is a guy that shrinks the strike zone, hits for power, drives in runs, and comes through at huge moments.
Well, look at yesterday for an example, Phil. Every at bat yesterday, his first at bat, he walked on a 3-1 pitch, on a close pitch. It was a 3-1 slider. It was a really good take. Next at bat, he walked, 3-2 slider again. His next two at bats, he had full counts and flied out to center and then grounded out to short. But he had 3-2 counts, three balls every – I mean, that's a lot of at bats or a lot of pitches for a hitter to see. He swings on his terms. He doesn't help the pitcher out. I say all the time, we get ourselves out as hitters. Kendall doesn't get himself out. He makes that pitcher earn that out. Now, he might make a out on a first pitch, but if he does, he's swinging at a pitch he wants to swing at. If he doesn't like that pitch, he's not afraid to hit with two strikes. He'll work the count. Eventually, he will get a pitch, and he'll put a good swing on it.
Well, if you were going to look at position groups, there was no more important position group than Arkansas relief pitching. And that's not just over the Alabama series. That's over the entire week of four games. Bubba, look at these numbers here from starting pitching compared to relief pitching. And it's just 1 week, and things change on a week-by-week basis sometimes. Arkansas starters gave the Razorbacks just 10 innings in four starts, 14 runs allowed in those starts, with a .390 on-base percentage allowed to opponents. Relievers threw 26 innings over the week. That's 16 more than the starters did. They only allowed 9 runs in those 26 innings. And the relief pitchers had a combined on-base percentage allowed of .259. It's about 130 points lower than starting pitchers. You know, just look at what happened in the Alabama series. I really feel like we've talked about Dylan Carter quite a bit. He pitched back-to-back games Saturday and Sunday, huge moments, multiple innings. He combined to go 6 innings, retired 18 of 26 batters, got 9 of them on groundouts, just 1 run in those 6 innings. I've continued to be impressed watching Dylan Carter fill right now the most important role in the bullpen.
And I love what he said in the post game yesterday. He said, he told Hobbs and DVH, look, give me the ball. I'll take it whenever, and I'll take it for however long you need me for. That's a guy that's a team player right there. That's a guy that wants the ball. He wants to go in there, compete, and help his team win. And I mean, that type of attitude is contagious. And I think you're starting to see more guys in the bullpen with that mindset of, look, I don't know when I'm going to pitch, but give me the ball and I'm going to get it done for you. Or I'm going to do the best I can to get it done for you. And I think you're starting to see that. And, you know, I still like Hunter Holland. I think he just ran into a team, you know, that was really hot Friday night. I think he's our Friday guy. Will made some good pitches also on Saturday. You know, I'm not down on our starting pitching. You know, I think it was just one of those weekends.
How about Gage Wood? Wood pitched on Friday, came in when they were hoping that he could settle things down for the team in that 12-1 loss, gave up a couple of runs in the only inning he pitched. Well, then there's Sunday, and Sunday is the rubber match, and he's up in the pen quite a bit, 6th inning, 7th inning, while Dylan Carter is working through some frames. And then he comes on in the 8th inning while Alabama's got the go-ahead runs on base to face a really tough hitter. Like, he's a true freshman facing a fifth-year senior in Drew Williamson, and he got him to line out to center field and then had the easiest inning of the weekend for any Arkansas pitcher, which was so nice to see out of the 27 innings that they played against Alabama, that the 27th was the easiest. Thank you, Gage Wood.
Boy, you're right. There weren't a lot of easy innings, but I like how he came in and faced Williamson. Yeah, he's a big, strong left-handed batter. You know, you make a mistake to him, and he's gonna hurt you. He threw him a really good slider, slash cutter. I really don't know exactly what it was. It was a pitch I haven't seen Gage throw, but he got in on him just enough to where he flied out to center field, hit it 99 miles an hour, but hit right to Tavian in center. It was a good pitch. And then he came in the ninth. I think the most clutch pitch he threw was the first pitch fastball into Jarvis. You know, 94 inside, Jarvis got jammed, rolled over to first base or to second base. That got the first out of that ninth inning, and that was huge. And he breezed from there. You know, he only threw 10 pitches to get through those four hitters, and he looked really good. And he looked like he wanted to be there, and that's what you want to see.
So the Razorbacks are 23-5. They've won 20 of 22 home games, 6-3 in the SEC, tied with LSU for first place. Not bad at all. for the first 7 weeks of the baseball season. And Bubba, I want to remind all of our listeners at the outset of our podcast today that you can donate to the tornado recovery and relief efforts for the communities in Central Arkansas and Eastern Arkansas that have been affected by Friday's tornado. You can text UNITE4AR to 41444. Again, you can text UNITE4AR. That's UNITE, the numeral 4AR, to 41444. And we appreciate any efforts that you're able to give. Moving on to our second inning, our performance of the weekend. This is a little bit of a tough one, Bubba, but I thought we could go with Tavian Josenberger, because I don't think anybody had a bigger effect on the week than Tavian did.
1-1 pitch, hammered by Tavian, way back right field. That ball on the roof of the Hunt Center. The wind of the pitch. A drive by Josenberger to right field, and he ties the game with a home run. His second homer in as many games, his fifth of the season. Tavian Josenberger, before joining Arkansas this year, had hit just three homers in 2 years at Kansas. He's got five now. We're not even at the halfway point. Jarvis whacks it to deep center field. That's trouble. Josenberger's back at the fence, leaping. What a catch! Tavian Josenberger robs him of a home run. Tavian Josenberger had to go all the way back quickly because that ball was hit on a line. A leaping catch at the yellow stripe. And they're going to stand and cheer for Tavian Josenberger.
But then there's another added thing that I think he brings to this team. You and I talked about it off the air. Some of the players have talked about it. Dave Van Horn confirmed it in Sunday's pregame interview.
He's a real spark, and, you know, he not only does he play good defense and, you know, run the bases well and obviously hits well, he's got a lot of energy. He's got a personality that you want in the dugout and on the field. I mean, he's always into it and kind of fiery, and, you know, so far it's been great.
I think Tavian Josenberger is the emotional leader of this baseball team.
I talked to Jace Borfin after the game on Saturday, and he alluded to the fact that, because I had asked Jace, I said, hey, as a team captain, do you feel like you had to say something after Friday night's game? And he's like, no, he said, the way our team is, really don't feel like we need to say something. We know what we got to do to go out and take care of business, he said. But Tavian did speak up and kind of get the troops fired up. And it was funny. He said, I can't tell you exactly what he said, but, you know, he said just enough to get us fired up. And I think that says a lot right there. And he really is. He's a spark. You watch him play the game. I love the energy that he plays with, whether he's on the bases, at the plate, in the field. I mean, he just brings a little extra to the lineup. And boy, he's been huge for us, Phil.
It's nice when it's the guy at the top of the order that's playing center field, you know, because those are energy positions. Like, I don't know any leadoff batters. They're just sort of blasé. They're fast. They're quick. They're excitable. I feel the same way about center fielders. And, man, you get a chance to shine at both of those spots, both in the batting order and in center field. Tavian was 8-for-14 last week, hit a couple of home runs, 6 runs batted in, scored 8. But, man, his plays in center field, he's really turned into a good center fielder, Bubba.
Boy, he has. You talk about the runs, 6 RBIs he drove in. He saved 4 runs in Saturday's game. I mean, you look at the ball he robbed. He robbed Jarvis of a 3-run homer. And then the other ball, it was at Hammeter, hit a ball line drive in a gap to right center, and he doubled off Thomas at first. I mean, that run would have scored. If Tavian didn't get to that ball, Thomas scores. He had already rounded second, was headed to third. He didn't think there's any way he could get to that. And that's like driving in 4 more runs right there, just saving those runs. And so he's been huge for us. I loved how he started off yesterday's game. We jokingly said he had 3 hits in his first at bat. And as a hitter, that's tough. You feel like you got a base hit on your first swing down the line. Then another ball that I thought was fair, and they reviewed it and said foul. I don't know. I don't even want to talk about that. And he eventually gets a base hit to right. So he technically had 3 hits in that first at bat, but he doesn't let stuff like that faze him. He gets back in the box, you know, and he had the big hit after the Brad Bohannon meltdown. you know, the crowd still going crazy on Saturday.
2-2 on Josenberger. Here's the pitch. A swing and a ball hit over first base. A fair ball down the right field line. Have fun with that, Coach Bohannon. Two-run double. Tavian Josenberger gives the Razorbacks the lead.
Hell yeah, take that. He's got a knack for just slowing the game down, but then playing with passion and energy, and I love it.
One thing I would like to see is for him to stop diving headfirst into home plate. I don't want to see that from anybody, but especially your center fielder. Those are caught in the moment sort of a thing. But back-to-back games, we saw him dive in headfirst home plate. I was really nervous watching him dive in on the play Saturday, where it took a moment for him to get up. But he was fine, obviously, because he played very well on Sunday. I just would like to see him slide foot first.
Well, it's scary. It really was, because I can't remember who the catcher was on Saturday. Was it Goose?
It was Thomas.
Yeah, it was Thomas. And, you know, he blocked home plate. Now, it's a fine line between was it obstruction or not. Technically, it really wasn't. But, I mean, he blocked the plate. He was 3 feet in front of home plate. So, Tavian had no way to get to home plate. Now, back in the day, we would have made a path to home plate, but you can't do that these days. But yeah, you're right. The way he slid into Thomas on Saturday, that was scary. And I tell you, I've got a middle finger filled with a pen in it still to this day from sliding head first. And so you got to be careful with it. I think the oven mitt helps, but boy, the way his shoulder and head hit Thomas's shin guards, that was a pretty solid hit. And so good to see he's okay there.
Which finger was that, Bubba?
It's my middle one. I'll show you next time I see you.
That one right there?
I show it to you a lot during the games.
You sure it's not your ring finger?
Nope.
It's definitely middle that finger. Middle one. Okay. Just making sure about that. Moving into our third inning, our stat of the week. Bubba, how about this for you? So the Razorbacks have lost 5 games. All 5 of those losses are by 9 runs or more. They are 8-0 in games decided by 3 runs or less. And I love a team that can win the close ball games. I don't care if you get blown out. That's baseball. That's going to happen. Maybe there's a little bit of a concern that every once in a while a game gets out of hand in the opponent's favor. But I'm much more interested in the idea that they're 8-0 in games decided by 3 runs or less.
Good teams win the close games. Bad teams lose the close games. Bottom line. Now, I think part of that goes back to your coaching staff, making the right choices, making the right decisions when the game's on the line. I think DVH is probably one of the best at that. It's just having a feel for his players, knowing, okay, kind of coaching from the inside out, knowing what he can get out of his players. And I think he gets the most out of them. The other is players believing in DVH, having confidence in them, and then going out and getting it done. But boy, you see it year in and year out. Razorbacks are really good in close games, and it goes back to, you know, what I call Razorback baseball.
I generally don't believe the idea that a team that consistently loses close games is a team that's that close to being a good team. No, you are what you are. When you lose close games on a consistent basis, you're a bad team. You win games routinely on a consistent basis. That doesn't mean that you're this close to being a bad team, does it? No, it means you're a good team. It's a collection of things, a collection of at-bats, plays in the field, individual pitches, individual decisions made by the skipper that lead to a team having the opportunity to win a game by 1 or 2 runs. It doesn't mean you're that close to being something that you're not. When you're 8-0 in games that are decided by 3 runs or less, you earn that.
Yeah, I 100%, Phil. I agree. And, you know, we can look at, and I don't want to throw Bohannon under the bus, but what he did Saturday fired this team up. Not that they needed I take that back. I don't know how much it fired the team up. It fired the crowd up, and I think the team fed off the crowd. You look at decisions that are made in the course of a game. You and I talked about multiple times, you know, they've got Williamson's hitting in the four hole on Saturday, and they've got him bunting in a situation where there's no way I'm going to bunt my four hole hitter. He probably right. hadn't bunted. He took a horrible bunt attempt, and we ended up back picking and getting the guy out anyway. You look at decisions like that, and I think that was a blunder. I think they pinch hit for Shelton twice, their home run hitter leader, in situations where I would have never pinch hit for him. Now, I'm not Brad Bohanna. It's not my team. He's an SEC coach. I'm not. But I look at things like that, and I'm like, those are, in my opinion, those are bad decisions that can cost them. And in the SEC, we've seen it. We see it every week. One pitch, one play, one blunder can affect the game, can affect the weekend series, and we seem to clutch up in that moment where other teams don't.
Let's move into our fourth inning. We've got some listener questions here, Bubba. And there are a number of people that have asked about Brady Tiger and how he is doing. Now, I spoke briefly with athletic trainer Corey Wood about Brady, and he said he's on the road back. He's doing very well. He is playing catch from 60 to 90 feet. He's on the road to recovery that they're hoping for, and that maybe sometime late April, he'll be ready to pitch again for this team. That's good news. I just remember, you know, when Brady came off the mound that one time, I thought, oh gosh, well, you know, not another elbow injury. And it was a good thing. It was a forearm. Forearm strains can be very tricky, but it does sound like he's on the road back.
Well, that's good news. And, you know, I've seen him throwing a little bit, and just seeing him throw a baseball is good. But you're right, when it comes to that forearm, you remember Connor Nolan had it in 2021. He had a forearm thing that kind of bugged him the whole season. He wasn't himself. And so that's something he's got to be patient with it, work back slowly. And I trust that Hobbs and Corey Wood, they're not going to rush him back, because we want him back in middle of May, somewhere through that area. It's great if he comes back in April and can pitch, but we want him peaking, you know, a little bit later in the season. So I don't think there's any need to rush him right now. If we can just hold things together, guys can continue to step up in the bullpen, I think we're going to be okay until Brady comes back.
Next question has to do with Hagen Smith, speaking of relief pitching. Some people think that because starting pitching has struggled this past week, that potentially you could look at Hagen Smith to be back in the starting rotation. And I guess I'd be surprised if that does happen, Bubba, because you can see the way that they're using Hagen. It's when you feel you've got the game, not in hand, but you need the guy with your best stuff to be on the mound, not at the start of the game when the score is 0-0, and not when your batters have been struggling a little bit at the outset of a game, but maybe when you already have the lead in the fifth inning, and then you go to Hagen Smith, and then things usually, normally, get shut down.
You look at Saturday, came in three innings through 52 pitches. He came in when the game was tied. You know, he gave up a couple runs, but he shut the offense down for the most part, gave us time to score runs and win that game. So whether he's starting or relieving right there, I mean, he came in and got the job done. Now, in a perfect world, you know, we see him Friday night close out a game and then come back on Sunday and give us a few more big innings in a perfect world. But it doesn't always work that way. I like it. I was against it in the beginning, and then I see how it can benefit us. And so I think it's awesome having him as kind of your ace in the hole. When you really need him, you bring him in. Now, you don't bring him in on a Friday night when the game's out of control, 9-1. You don't bring a guy in like that. But I've grown to like it, and you know, I don't see a change, and I don't even know when Tiger comes back, there may not be a change. He's just kind of, Hagen's kind of floating around, and use him in the situation that best fits him on a weekend to get us a win.
Still, you probably need at least more innings from your starting pitchers than what we saw over this last weekend. That is a lot of innings for the relievers to throw, 26 out of a possible 36 innings for the week. So you're going to need more innings from your starters. And just going by the track record this year of Hunter Holland, I'd expect him to go out Thursday at Ole Miss and pitch well. And, you know, for Will McIntyre, it's really just about, maybe he was a little bit unlucky the other day, but I mean, he's got a little issue with leaving some pitches up recently. But he's been such a good competitor that you would think he'd figure it out sometime soon.
Yeah. Hey, on Will McIntyre, I agree, first of all, on Hunter Holland. I think he's going to go out and have a great game against Ole Miss. You know, those were bad, and I get it. Both teams have to pitch in the conditions, but with that wind howling out, you know, Friday, it was not a good day to be a pitcher. Same with Saturday. But Will McIntyre's he gets ahead of hitters. He's just not being able. He hadn't been able to finish the hitter. He's got to be able to make that third pitch. And I still go back and look at all the 0-2 balls that are catching way too much of the plate, those 0-2 pitches. And look, you don't want to throw it to the backstop 0-2, but you got to make a competitive pitch, but try to get it out of the zone. There's just too many balls that I feel like Will's leaving over the plate 0-2. And I know they have a plan. They're not trying to do that, but I don't know if they're trying to be perfect. And when you're trying to be perfect, you leave balls over the middle of the plate. But, you know, I think that's the one thing that I see in Will McIntyre that needs to get a little bit better. But I tell you what, he's a great competitor when he's out there, and I love the ball in his hand. That hadn't changed.
Hey, speaking of relief roles, how about the role that Cody Adcock is filling? He's the guy that comes in with men on base. He did it on Saturday facing one batter with one man on base at second base. And struck out Colby Shelton, and that was the only batter he faced. Then he comes on with the bases loaded in the first inning after Ben Bibee struggled Sunday and gets a fly out from Matt Cassetti. Like, those are really important moments in a ball game.
Oh, they're huge. You know, when he came in Saturday and struck Shelton out, that was big right there. Well, you know, what he did Sunday, you know, coming in with the bases loaded, you know, he ended up going 3 1/3, 3 hits, 1 run, you know, he threw 53 pitches. I mean, that was a huge performance, and, you know, he looked great. And so he's another guy that could serve multiple roles. And, you know, if we get through a Friday and a Saturday without having to use Cody, you've always got him to start on Sunday, which is huge. If you can start him, I don't know if he's better in a starting role or coming out of the pen, but the guy can get outs and he's got elite stuff.
Ricky and Dennis both asked about Christian Fauch. They were wondering why Christian hasn't pitched very much of late. Now, we've seen Christian, who's a freshman out of Colorado, for just 3 games this year. He's thrown 3 no-hit innings. I guess I thought maybe he might get a chance to close on Sunday. But, man, Gage Wood looked really good doing that. I think eventually Wood is a starting pitcher. Fauch, I think, is a back-of-the-bullpen sort of a guy just on his repertoire. But why do you think we haven't seen him much?
Well, he's a freshman, and I don't think the right situation came up. You know, I think they didn't want to use him in Friday's game. Saturday, the way it lined up with Dylan, Cody, and Hagen coming in, it just didn't work there. And then yesterday, I think it came down to matchups, and they liked the matchup with Gage Wood right there at the end of the game. But I think Christian Fauch is a guy he's a freshman. I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities. I see him as one of those guys that could come up big for us, kind of like Will McIntyre emerged late in the year last year. I can see Christian coming in and getting some really big outs for us, you know, as we move on into the latter part of the season. His fastball splitter, and I can tell you, Phil, as a hitter, that splitter that he throws, it's hard to see out of a pitcher's hand. That's one of the pitches you don't see the shape of the ball, and next thing you know, it looks like it's belt high. You swing at it, ends up in the dirt, and so that's just a great weapon that he's got. Plus, he's got a 95-mile-an-hour fastball to go with it.
Dave and Matt have both said he struggled throwing strikes in the fall. I just think they're going to bring him along carefully this year, but I do think he'll get an opportunity in a big moment sometime soon. Fifth inning, Bubba. It's your hit kit. And once again, we're not talking hitting in this case, because this is just a term. We're talking tools. We're talking baseball skills in this fifth inning every week. And we're talking outfield throws today. There's a couple of outfielders that right now have combined for 6 assists. Jace Borfin has a couple of assists from the outfield. Tavian Josenberger has 4. And you've identified things about the way that they set up for the throw that you like, Bubba.
Well, as an outfielder, Phil, you want to throw someone out. I used to get really excited with a runner at third base, less than two outs. I'd be like, all right, I hope I get that fly ball where I want to gun someone at the plate. I wanted to do it because I want the pitcher, you know, I want to save him that run. I want to save the team that run, you know. A lot of it's just about putting your body in the right position, getting behind the ball, fielding through it. But what I've seen our outfielders do that I'm really impressed with is how aggressive they are to the ball. As someone that's coached for years, I always coach third base. I go off of where is that fielder in relation to where my base runner is. Has he fielded the ball yet? Is the ball in his glove? Is he in a position to make a throw? So I see our guys really attacking the ball, coming and get it. As a third base coach, if that guy is aggressive coming to get the ball and he's got the ball, I'm not going to send the runner. You know, you watch the guys throw in pregame. In and out, and you get an idea of his arm strength. Most guys look pretty good in and out, but it's different doing it when the game starts. But I like how aggressive they are to the ball. The one thing I want to mention though, Phil, is just the ability to throw to the right base. Mm-hmm. You see guys, I see it against teams that we play all the time. Our guys don't do it a whole lot, but if you're in left field and there's a runner at first base and there's a ball hit kind of semi down the left field line, that runner's going to go first to third. I see that left fielder throw it into third base all the time. The batter ends up on second base. That left fielder has to know, look, I'm not going to get that guy at third. He had a secondary lead. He got a good jump around third. I'm not going to get him at third. I've got to throw to second to keep the double play in play. And that's something that's another thing that I see our guys do. I see Jared Wagner do a really good job of that in left field of cutting that ball off, throwing it to second, keeping that batter runner at first. You look at Tavian, let's say Friday night. You don't see him make a lot of mistakes, Phil, but it was a 9-1 game. There were runners at first and second. He got a deep fly ball to center, and he airmailed it to third base. And the runner at first tagged up and went to second. So they end up with runners at second and third. And I'm not dogging Tavian right here. I'm getting ready to defend him. They're down 9-1. Normally, Tavian would throw that ball to second base and keep the runner at first and keep the double play in order. But, you know, team's down 9-1. I think he was just trying to make a big play right there and try to get that lead runner down 9-1. He's like, look, I'm going to take a shot here, try to get that guy at third. And he threw the wrong base. The guy went. But I'll take that every time. Going back to Borfin in right field, you know, his ability to charge the ball and keep that runner from going first to third is huge as well. When there's a runner at first base, I know the Razorbacks are huge on going first to third on that right fielder. You see other right fielders not come and get the ball. Borfin is so good at coming to get the ball. Plus, he's got a good arm and able to keep that runner at first from advancing to third. And if you keep him at second base, it's huge. Once again, you keep the double play in order. One of the last things that I see our guys doing really good, a good job of is positioning. You know, you get a runner at second, two strikes on a hitter. Typically you cheat in a step or two. You're not expecting a ball really driven in that situation. So you can cheat in a step or two and throw that guy out at the plate. You know, obviously you got to know who your runner is. You know, your runner at second, you know, if he's a speedster, you got no chance. You know, if he's a big donkey, you know, you can throw that guy out. Same with your batter. You got to know your batter, you know his strengths. Is he a guy that can drive the ball? But if not, with two strikes, cheat in a little bit and throw that guy out. But most importantly, keep the ball down, throw it through the cutoff man. As soon as you airmail that ball over the cutoff man, the runner's going to go the batter runner's going to go to second on you, and there's no double play in order. The only exception to that, Phil, and this is when I really loved getting a fly ball, is a runner at third base with no one else on base, one out. Mm-hmm. Because as an outfielder, all you got to do is position yourself, get behind that ball, and let you want to show off that cannon.
Then you can
right
make
there.
The hero throw right there.
you can throw it all the way home. There's no cutoff play, man, in that situation. You're getting the guns out, and you're going to throw that guy out at home.
Yeah, you can turn around and shout to the crowd, are you not entertained?
So I know that's a whole lot that I just spit out right there, but there's so many things an outfielder can do, a good outfielder, to save runs. And a lot of it goes unnoticed, whether it's just aggressive charging a ball, third base coach doesn't send him.
Well, that's a thing that stands out to me about this outfield, Bubba. And I'd never seen Jared Wagner play before. I hadn't seen Tavian Josenberger, and we barely saw Jace Borfin last year. I didn't know about outfield play for this team this year. I think it's pretty good. I think instinctively they're good outfielders, all three of them. They're good cutting balls off. They're good charging balls. You know, they never seem to collide with an infielder or each other or come close to each other. They communicate pretty well. I'm just impressed with the outfield play.
Now, the thing I've noticed about Jared Wagner is he likes to play deep. He's more comfortable coming in. Of course, you know, at Baum Stadium, Baum Walker, that wind drifts out. So it's tough playing left field. You got the sun to deal with. You got the wind. But he plays a little bit deeper than most left fielders, but he does a great job of closing on the ball and coming to get it, plus also going back and finding the fence. So, but Tavian's the one that I've been most impressed with, how he moves with two strikes. He's a lot like a Dominic Fletcher. You know, it's little subtle things, but with two strikes on a hitter, you'll see Tavian shift over a few steps. That's the difference in catching that ball in the gap and not catching that ball in the gap, or maybe coming in a step or two, catching that weak, that little blooper or a jam shot when a guy's got two strikes. And I see Tavian doing a really good job of making those small adjustments. And it, you know, he's able to make a play.
You know, that would lead to a whole other conversation that we should have on another podcast or on the broadcast about fielding positioning, which so often comes from the dugout, comes from the coaching staff. You know, you'll see Nate Thompson pop out of the dugout with that neon green towel positioning the outfielders and Dave Van Horn positioning the infielders in a certain way. And there were a couple of line drives right at Caleb Calley yesterday that came right after he'd been reposition just by a step or two. So, I mean, that goes to the coaches as well. Time for our sixth inning. Today, we get to talk with Dylan Carter. Dylan, how's the body feeling today, man? Or it's a day after you've pitched back-to-back days for Arkansas against the Alabama Crimson Tide. So how's the body feeling?
Yeah, body, it's a little tired, but it was a good little day off. I'm recovering pretty well. The ankle, not so much, but other than that, I feel pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the ankle. I knew you got, on Sunday, the second pitch that you threw to Andrew Pinckney, he lined right back at you, and it was off of your right ankle, the ankle you push off?
Yes.
Well, Bubba and I wondered about how that affected you during the game, because you pitched really well in that game. Did that have any of an effect on your on how you felt emotionally or mentally, positively or negatively?
No, I just kind of tried to push it to the side. When I was out there, the adrenaline and just to like thinking of executing pitches just was kind of like at the forefront of my mind. So the ankle really wasn't like, I wasn't thinking about it, so it wasn't really hurting. But anytime I'd go to the dugout, I could feel it a little more. There was a few pitches I threw that I could feel it when I pushed off, but I tried not to let it bother me. And I just wanted to continue to push through the game however long I could go.
How many different shades of purple is that ankle today?
Oh, that whole ankle is just a dark, solid purple.
Well, how do you feel about the weekend? Do you think that might limit the way that you might be able to pitch, or do you think you'll be okay to go against Ole Miss this weekend?
I'll be good to go.
Yeah, it takes a lot to get a competitor off the pitcher's mound. A sore ankle is not going to be the thing, right?
No, sir, it's not.
Matt Hobbs, I saw something that Dave Van Horn had mentioned in the postgame after Sunday, how he will talk to you between innings and ask for honest communication. And I wonder, you know, as a competitor, you probably always in your mind feel that you can go retire the batter that you're asked to get. Is it ever difficult to be straight up honest about how you feel physically when you're coming back into the dugout?
Yeah, it's hard to be honest because, I mean, all of us want to go out there and pitch for as long as we can. And so I try to be as honest as I can with him. Like, he really wants to know how we feel because they care about us as players and the health and safety of us before they put us out there on the mound or any other player in general. And so Sunday he was like, after every inning, he was like, be as honest as you can with me. Like, if you feel anything, if you're sore, tired, let me know. Like, and we'll get somebody else in the game. And I just kept telling him, I was like, I feel better and better after every inning. And, you know, after the seventh inning, that was supposed to be my last inning, because he's like, just get three more outs and we're going to turn it to the closer, or Gage. We're going to let him close this game out. And we'd come in the dugout and I had my best inning of work, in my opinion, the seventh. And he's like, can you get us three more outs? And I said, absolutely. And I think he asked probably two or three times if I felt good enough to go out there. And because him and Coach Van Horn, they want us to be honest and they don't want us to get hurt, especially this early in the season. And so as a competitor, yeah, I want to go out there and pitch, but I will be honest with them whenever I'm tired or feel any kind of like tightness or soreness set in.
It's been interesting and really fun to watch you develop this year from somebody that, quite honestly, I don't know if a lot of fans expected much from you, you know, but you've come right into a situation where the bullpen needed innings, and man, you've given some really important innings. What did you expect from yourself when the season started?
I expected from myself, just anytime I got an opportunity or my number called, just go out there and compete and throw like to the best ability that I could. Coming into the season, you know, I didn't think I was going to throw that much. Like, I knew I was going to throw here and there, but I didn't think I was going to throw as much. And then it's kind of one of those deals where Brady went down and they called me into the game and I had a really good opportunity. And I went out there and made the most of it. And it's just kind of a deal where I keep getting more opportunities and going out there and making the most of it.
Says a lot about the need to just be ready for anything in this sport, doesn't it? Like, you never know when somebody might get hurt. It's not like you're rooting for an injury, but you know, you're on the team for a reason. You're not just there to wear a uniform. Right. And sometimes your number gets called and you got to be ready to go. It really sounds like you were. That's a mindset that might be a little bit difficult to have though sometimes, especially after redshirting last year.
Yeah. So my mental side for that was just like, I've always had the mental like preparation of just, if you don't got to get ready, if you stay ready. So I just try to stay as ready as I can for whenever they call my number. That way it's just not like a surprise, like, oh, you're going in the game. It's like, I'm already ready whenever they do call my name down there.
I know you were a catcher for a lot of time in high school. And when you're a catcher, like, you're involved in everything. Like, you know, pitchers are involved in everything, but you don't get to pitch every inning. When you're a catcher, you might be out there every inning. Do you ever miss that?
Yeah, I do sometimes. Ever since I picked up a baseball, I was always a catcher. And so I caught since I was probably 5, 6 years old all the way until I was 18, which was just 3 years ago. I do miss being a part of catching. At the same time, I really like pitching. And when I first got into it my junior year of high school, it was kind of one of those things where if I had to stop catching, like, it wasn't a big deal because I just naturally found this love for pitching.
Man, I tell you, you know, for what we were talking earlier about, a badly bruised ankle is not going to keep you from pitching. That sounds like a catcher's mentality too, because you know what it's like to be a catcher. You're going to get the snot beat out of you back there. You're going to have some bruised ankles. Do you sometimes feel like you still have that catcher mentality?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes, like, I probably shouldn't say this, and I don't know, coaches want to hear this, but sometimes I still have that catcher's mentality on the mound with me, like, because when you're a catcher, you're a hitter too. And so sometimes what I want to do is try to think like a hitter of like what pitches come in and try to fool them. But I try not to do that as much because I trust Coach Hobbs and I trust my catchers to call great games. So
I know you like Motley Crue. Would you consider yourself a huge Motley Crue fan or just sort of a Motley Crue fan?
I have one song that's just like, it kind of gets me pumped up for everything. It's been like a song that I've always gone to that's pumped me up since, I'd say, high school years.
So which song is that?
That's the walk-up song, Kickstart My Heart.
Well, I was going to ask you to rank Motley Crue songs. I only have four of them. You probably heard of them all. So I'll put Kickstart My Heart at the top. After that, I'm going to give you three more songs. Home Sweet Home, Dr. Feelgood, or Girl Don't Go Away Mad, Just Go Away. What's 2, 3, and 4?
Number two, I would have to say, is Dr. Feelgood. Three would be Home Sweet Home. And four, I've never heard of that last song you said. So I'll have to go listen to it.
It's a good breakup song. Everybody needs a good breakup song sooner or later. I'm not making plans for you. I'm just letting you know. Sooner or later, we all need a good breakup song. Don't Go Away Mad is a pretty good one.
My dad's a huge Motley Crue fan, so I'll have to ask him about that one.
Okay, ask him about that, and that's a good place to end. Dylan, I really appreciate you doing Bases Loaded with us today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
You got it. Take care.
You too.
Bubba, seventh inning stretch. We have not even discussed Brad Bohannon's ejection just yet. I had to wait until the seventh inning stretch, our entertainment portion of Bases Loaded, to discuss Brad Bohannon's ejection. Now, truthfully, we don't see a lot of ejections anymore. Not in Major League Baseball, not in college baseball. And that's because of replay. But balls and strikes, and that'll rear its head sometimes. And that's what got Coach Bo ejected from the game. Bubba, it didn't take very long for both of us to realize that Brad Bohannon was not interested in sticking around in that game for very much longer.
You've seen a lot of minor league games. I played a lot of minor league professional baseball. You know when a manager wants to get tossed. I mean, there's games where a manager would show up and be like, I'm only going to go a couple innings today. I mean, you know when they want to get tossed.
In some cases, they might have had a rough night the night before. You know, I think it's a little different in college ball, but sure, I've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, so you just know Brad Bohannon wanted. I don't know if he was trying to fire his team up. I would assume that's what it was. But when he made that call, so early in the game, Kendall Diggs' third at bat, he got absolutely screwed on two called strikes on off the plate, several inches on the outside corner off the plate. They were not strikes. He called them strikes. Dave Van Horn didn't act like he didn't lose control in the dugout. I think he might have yelled out to the home plate umpire, hey, you know, tighten it up a little bit. Let's go. Brad Bohannon was banging on the railing of the dugout. He came out of the dugout yelling, knowing that you can't argue balls and strikes, and they gave him the hand. I thought the home plate umpire was very patient with him, and he just kept on and kept on, and then eventually got tossed. But I think he wanted to get tossed. Now, if you want to know my opinion on that, I love the fact that Brad Bohannon was defending his players. You know, we love it. As players, we want to know that our head coach or our manager – has our back and is defending us. But what he did at the end of that, Phil, and you know, I'm sorry to get ahead of you, you're probably going to mention it. What he did at the end of that is just, that was just, I thought it was really weak and pathetic. I'm sorry. I don't know Brad Bohannon. I've always thought him as, I had respect for him. But what he did when he kind of mocked our hog call, you don't come into our stadium, into Baum Walker, and mock our hog call and mock our fans. You can do whatever you want out on the field. Keep it on the field, though. Don't include our fans. It has nothing to do with our fans. We've got the best college baseball fans in baseball, the most passionate fans. I thought what he did was really weak and pathetic, and I lost a lot of respect for him, to be honest with you. And I'll tell you what it did. We talked about it earlier. I don't think it fired the team up. I think it fired the fans up, which our team fed off of our fans, and we go on to win the series.
I guess it was the second time that he'd done that at Baum. I didn't see it in 2021, but others did. Marshall Denton, former Arkansas pitcher, tweeted about it. So the hog call mock was something he'd done before. But, I mean, I think it's a case of somebody just losing their temper, you know, and they're not thinking at that point that I look like a fool. They just kind of look like a fool. I've been there. I think I've done that. You probably have done something like that, too. Unfortunately, like when you do it in front of 11,000 people, that's just what they're going to remember you for, you know. And I've seen a lot of ejections, some really entertaining ones. I would give Brad Bohannon like maybe a 7, maybe a 7 out of 10, maybe a 6.5 for the eject, because he did, you know, he got red faced. He screamed a little bit. There wasn't any dirt kicking. He didn't pick up a base and throw it. You know, he didn't stomp around for very long. It was the hog call that everybody remembers. I get about a 6.5 out of 10. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm not going to give him that much. I've seen first of all, the pitch he was arguing was a borderline pitch. It was a 50-50 pitch, maybe 60-40 pitch. It was a strike. It wasn't the first one that had happened during that game. As far as his antics, I don't know. I love the passion, though. I love the energy. I love all that. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, I don't like what he did to the fans. I didn't know he had done that previous. I didn't know that was something that he had done before. Maybe he's got a problem with the hog call. Maybe he's jealous because, you know, Bama doesn't have anything like that. There's no tradition there. But that's a tradition here at Arkansas, and I think to mock that was really weak. And like I said, I'm going to give him a zero. But when it comes to like a Brad Bohan, you know what I do? I judge everything off of what would Dave do. I need initials for that. What would Dave do? WWDD. That doesn't really sound good. But would Dave Van Horn have done what Bohannon did? I mean, Dave goes out. He's about as fiery of a head coach as you're going to see.
He's had good ejection in his career, but I don't ever think he's taken on the opposing fans.
Yeah, he wouldn't because he's got class, you know, and he knows how to handle himself. But yeah, he will absolutely tear into an umpire. And I miss those days. I wish there were more of those because that fires me up to see that. I love seeing a head coach go out and defend his players like that. I love it. But, you know, DVH would never look up at the stands and you know, he would never give Texas, you know, horns down. I'm sure he's thinking it in his head. I would do it probably, but I don't think DVH would. But, you know, you just look at just there's a certain way to carry yourself. Now, it's a little different talking SEC ball versus professional baseball. And professional baseball, things get a little bit crazy out there. There's the dog days of August hits. People start to get a little bit psycho and things happen. But, yeah. So, anyway, I just thought Brad Bowen kind of got carried away. And we'll just leave it at that.
How much time have you been spending on your skid steer? Because you, like, came to the ballpark off the skid steer and went home and got right back on that thing.
Hey, that's my happy place right now. I'm telling you, Phil, I love it. I could get on. It's like a big Tonka toy for me. You ever had a Tonka toy when you were growing up? One of those
trucks?
I
sure did. Yeah. I just never rode it 24 hours a day.
I get on that thing and I'm like a little kid all over again. So I love it. But yeah, spent a lot of time on it. But what's good is I can get on there and I can listen to the Bases Loaded podcast while I'm getting some work done.
I love it. I love it. I just can picture you with a cowboy hat, just like, you know, treating it like a rodeo. Eighth inning. Well, let's talk about a couple positions here that have been traded between some starters. You've had five different starters at third base, and it's been the catching position has been split between Parker Rowland and Hudson Polk until this weekend. Parker caught all three games, caught very well, and came through with the game-winning hit on Sunday.
Rowland lines the pitch into center field, a base hit. Cole scores. Parker Rowland breaks the tie with an RBI single. What a moment there for Parker Rowland.
Plus had a big back pick of a runner on Saturday. And then Caleb Callie played every game at third base this week and hit a big home run, fielded pretty well. So it feels like Dave has chosen a catcher for the weekends for the time being and might have chosen a third baseman for right now, too.
As a player, you want to know you're in the lineup. You want to know I'm going to show up and play that day. Mentally, that's huge for a guy. So I think it's good that we're starting to settle into the starting positions. I really did. I thought Caleb Callie had a good weekend. You know, bounced a throw on Friday to first base. But I really think the wind affected him there. Once again, I hate to make excuses, but that wind's howling into your face as a third baseman. You're afraid you're going to air mail it. Sometimes you leave it a little bit short. I'd rather him bounce it than throw it in the stands. But Parker Rowland behind the plate, I thought he was huge. I thought he called a really good series. You know, once again, I don't put any stock into the 22 hits on Friday. That is what it is. But I thought they did a really good job of executing pitches. And at the plate, he came up huge for us in Sunday's game with that big base hit to go ahead in the sixth inning. That was a good job. Fastball down and away, drove it right back up the middle. So, and when it comes to catching, in the past, you look last year, you know, you've got Michael Turner caught caught every game of every series. And I don't know if that's where Dave's going with this or if he'll use it where occasionally Hudson Polk gets in there depending on the matchup. But I thought Parker Rowland did a really good job this weekend.
And also Harold Cole started Sunday's game at shortstop. Now, John Bolton tried to bunt Saturday in a sacrifice moment and took a pitch off the big knuckle on the pointer finger on his throwing hand. Now, Corey Wood says that he's going to be okay, but it was taped up, bandaged up for Sunday. He did take infield and was available to hit, took batting practice, but Harold got the start at shortstop. So that's another thing to watch. Harold had a couple of plays where, you know, he was a little bit late with a throw, a little off with one of the other throws, and is still inconsistent at shortstop. In fact, I think Harold's been better at third base than at shortstop.
He had a ball deep in the hole. He took a little bit too long to get rid of it. But I want to say at the time it was Seidel. Was it Seidel running down the line?
Yeah, it's probably the fastest guy they have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, John Bolton gets rid of it a little bit quicker. I think it took him a little too long to get rid of it. Maybe he'd have been safe anyway. The one that stands out to me is the chopper he got, kind of a routine ball up the middle. He threw on the run and air-mailed it, threw it over the head of Brady Slavens. That's the play that you have to make as an SEC shortstop. That's that routine play. I say it all the time. The great players make the routine play. But for the most part, you know, he made all the other plays. You know, who knows what's going to happen? It might be another situation, Dave, where Phil, where Dave uses it kind of as a matchup. If he doesn't like the matchup that day with that day's starting pitcher, he might go with Harold Cole at short. I don't think he's losing a whole lot there. I really love John Bolton's defense. And I feel like he's had some better at bats lately, you know, so who knows where they're going to go. I think it'll be more of just a matchup type thing, but you know, if they've got to go with Harold there, I think he's going to do a good job for us.
Another guy to bring up here before we get into the ninth inning is Brady Slavens, who had really struggled for a span of about five games and didn't start Saturday's game because of that. Reese Robinette got the start at first base, and Brady started the game on the bench. Comes on a pinch hit in the seventh inning with Arkansas down a run. Lines a single through the left side. Alabama had opened that left side of the infield for left-handed batters all weekend. And that really showed you his approach for the rest of the series. For the rest of the series, Brady did not strike out. He had another base hit to left field on Sunday, almost hit one out to left field on Sunday as well. And I was impressed by, plus a really good play at first base on a bad hop that might have been a game saver on Saturday. I was impressed how Slavens, who's a veteran on this team, just didn't pout about not starting. And when he was given the opportunity to get back out there, played a very big role.
Well, you're right, Phil. It was huge. And a lot of times Dave will sit a guy out and just let him kind of slow the game down. He had a rough night Friday. Kind of his emotions kind of got to him. You could see it, you know, especially his last at bat after he struck out. I really like the fact that Dave set him down. But what I really love is how Brady came in and did exactly what you just said. And you're right. That play he made down the line, that ball took a weird hop. If that gets by him, you know, we probably don't win that ball game. So that was a really good play. But, you know, the ball he hit yesterday to left field, he hit it 100 miles an hour. If he'd have hit it the inning before, that ball goes out while the wind's still blowing. The wind had kind of died down just a little bit. But the way he stayed on those two balls and drove them to left field against the shift was huge. And if he'll stay with that approach, he's going to pull the ball automatically. But Brady's got enough power. He can leave the yard at any point, any place, any time, regardless of wind. And so he's just got to be a little more patient at the plate. Hunt pitches in his zone. You got to give up something at the plate. But I agree. How he came off the bench as a veteran guy was huge for us.
Ninth inning is a look ahead as we wrap up Bases Loaded here in week number 8. Razorbacks close out their homestand tonight, weather permitting, 6 o'clock against Arkansas State. But then there's this weekend. Bubba and I'm going into true enemy territory without you to Oxford, Mississippi, the home of the reigning national champion Ole Miss Rebels. It still hurts to say, but it is true. And they're struggling right now. Which I've got the world's smallest violin for Ole Miss and for Mississippi State struggling as they are. But still, I don't care what Ole Miss's record is in conference, which is 1-8 right now. because that's a dangerous place to play. And they have plenty of guys left over from last year's national championship team. And you can't take anything for granted. Plus, you know, I mean, going to have a lot of khakis and beer showers and marble counters in the broadcast booth. And, you know, it's just a little bit different when you go to Oxford. It's fun, but it ain't bomb and it ain't Fayetteville. It's just a little different.
Well, I look at it as Ole Miss last year, basically, in my opinion, cost us a national championship. You know, if we beat Dylan DeLucia in that last game, we go on, we play OU, we win a national championship. Yeah, I think everyone knows how I feel about Ole Miss. Not a big fan. Boy, I wish I was going with you, Phil. I hate that I'm not going to be there, but anything can happen. With their record 1-8, that doesn't matter. You can throw that out, because when we roll into town, they play us different than they play most other teams. And so, you know, we can't take them for granted. We got to go in there and put together three good games and get a series win.
How crazy are the SEC standings right now, where Arkansas and LSU at 6-3 are tied for the West Division lead, but both teams would be in fifth place with that record in the East Division, because Vanderbilt's undefeated 9-0. Bubba, Vanderbilt has outscored SEC teams 111-29. And then you got Kentucky and Carolina at 8-1, and Florida is 7-2. So there's only two teams in the West Division with a winning league record. That's Arkansas and LSU. Those two teams are three games ahead of everybody else in the West. And then the last two national champions, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, are a combined 2-16. Again, the world's smallest violin plays for them. But that's crazy.
It is, Phil, because you look at the West, and it seems like the West has dominated the last several years. Now, you can look at Tennessee last year. They had a great year. Vanderbilt's always pretty good, but the West has always kind of dominated since I've been doing this. And so it's crazy to see how it's kind of flip-flopped this year. But seeing Ole Miss and Mississippi State at 1-8 kind of gives me a good fuzzy feeling inside. So I kind of like that. I just hope that we can go there this weekend and take care of business. But, yeah, when you see what's going on, to me, one of the biggest surprises is Kentucky, 8-1. Mm-hmm. That's something that I didn't see going into this season. But, you know, like we say, anything can happen in the SEC. You just never know.
Anything that makes you feel fuzzy, Bubba, I'm perfectly happy with, because we know how you are with fuzz.
Don't even go there, Phil.
Well, that's it for Bases Loaded for edition number 8. We will see you next week, of course, Bubba. I'll miss you this weekend in Oxford, but I know we'll be in touch.
We'll go represent, Phil. Go Hogs.
Bubba and I will also see you guys at the ballpark.